Hold on, Governor. They miscued us. You're listening to the Hour of the Time. I'm William Cooper. Well, if you were listening on satellite, you probably heard a couple of false starts there. Something that we thought was never going to happen again. Evidently, the board operator at WWCR went to sleep on the job. But we're here. If you're listening on shortwave, I'm sure that you picked up the military teletype jamming that's going on tonight. So you're going to have to listen very carefully to tonight's broadcast. Now, last night, Walter Myers, as you all know, gave you a pretty good rundown on a lot of things, but he forgot to give you his address where you can write to him. Now, if you want the special information pack, ladies and gentlemen, that he offered, write to Walt Myers, Constitutionist Networking Center, 442 East 1250 Road. That's 442 East 1250 Road, Baldwin, Kansas, 66006. That's 66006. Now remember, that's a zip code. Don't call me accusing Walt of all this 666 stuff like some of you do. It's a zip code. It belongs to the post office, and Walt Myers has nothing to do with assigning zip codes to post offices. So write to Walt Myers, send $12, in care of the Constitutionist Networking Center, 442 East 1250 Road, Baldwin, Kansas, 66006. And toward the end of the broadcast, I'll try to announce that again. I know many of you missed it. Now, because of tonight's guest, I'm going to deviate a little bit and just read an article in the Courier dated February 9th, 1995. Critical habitat proposed. Critical habitat for the Mexican spotted owl has now been proposed by the United States Fish and Wildlife Service that will mostly close 4.7 million acres in New Mexico and Arizona. In simple terms, if the habitat is approved, New Mexico and Arizona forests, that's forests, plural, will be closed with no logging at all. 80% of cattle grazing will be ended and recreation restrictions will be applied. We've already been told by the local forest people here that forget about this 80% and forget about recreation restrictions. They're going to close the forests, period. The comment period ends March 7th, ladies and gentlemen, and you should be calling and writing from all over the West because you're next. If you think this is just New Mexico and Arizona, you better wake up and think again because you're next. This is happening all over the country. Now remember, the comment period ends March 7th, which means everybody has to get involved in this. So contact Sylvia Allen. That's Sylvia Allen, the Southwest Coordinator of People for the West, at area code 602-535-3385. That's 602-535-3385. Do that, please. Also, for those of you who missed the number for the Arizona Republic. It's 800-331-9282. That's 800-331-9282. Now, when you call, they're pretending like they don't know what article you're talking about. So demand to talk to the publisher or the news editor. If you want to make your comments, the girl on the switchboard is pretending like there wasn't any such article. And the Arizona Republic has a long history of lying. And I mean lying through their teeth. They are the most despicable socialist rag, probably. Well, I can't say the most, because they're right up there with the most despicable socialist rags in this country. Now, we have a very interesting guest tonight. I'm very proud to call him a personal friend. We have been working together in Kansas City with a lot of other people, some of the best brains in this country on constitutional issues, people who are devoted with their heart and soul and would die for the Constitution in a second if it was required of them. And our guest has been right in the middle of this and has chaired these meetings on occasion and has contributed a wealth to this effort to bring together all of these disparate third parties and large groups of people in order to field a constitutionist candidate for the presidency and vice presidency in 1996. So don't go away, folks. You're not going to want to miss one single minute of this interview with Evan Mecham, the ex-governor of the state of Arizona.
For which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. The Pledge of Allegiance to the flag and the pledge to the ideals of our forefathers, the men who fought and died in the building of this great nation. It's a pledge to fulfill our duties and obligations as citizens of the United States and to uphold the principles of our Constitution. And last but not least, it's a pledge to maintain the first-rate freedom cherished by all Americans. Freedom of speech, freedom of religion, freedom from want, and freedom from fear. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America, to the Republic for which it stands, one nation under God,
Governor Mecham, welcome to the Hour of the Time.
Good to be here, Bill.
Let's start off by giving some background. A lot of our listeners don't live in the state of Arizona and really don't know who you are, and really can't blame them the way the press misleads people these days. I consider this listening audience to be one of the most well-educated in the country. So if you'd like to start off by giving some of your background and how you got to where you're at and where we go from here, then this hour is going to be yours, and I'll sort of help you along when I can.
Well, Bill, you see where I'm at. I'm a citizen worried about his country, and of course I've always been. And have been involved off and on in politics, businessman all my life, been successful in that, and but always in, not really liking politics and party politics particularly, but concerned periodically about what's happening. Been involved in the state government, served a term as a state senator. I've run a few times, felt that one of the most important offices that, in the country was the office of governor of the state, because as I have watched with great concern, as the federal government has continually just step by step by step taken over the state's rights and have just violated the Constitution, just ignored it, just trampled it literally, by doing exactly what some of the founders were afraid might happen, and that is to center the power in Washington. And of course, in doing so, it's raised not only the cost of government, but it's also taken the decision-making power away from being close to the people back at Washington, where people don't really know what's going on. And we've got ourselves into a position where this country is in very dire circumstances, where, well, if we really recognize where we are, we'd say the country's broke. It isn't broke because of the dynamic economy that we have, but the fact that they're continuing to spend more money and talk about reducing the deficit, when in reality they're increasing spending every year by sizable amounts, and the deficit keeps growing and the debt keeps growing until one of these days they won't be able to pay their bills. And when they won't, then of course you've got a broke country and you'll have chaos in the country. So I've been concerned about that and have felt that the answer is to get some strong action among the states, and for the states to insist that they're equal partners in the compact between the federal government and the state, that the Constitution was put together by some very wise and, yes, in my opinion, inspired people, inspired by God, to raise up for that purpose, to put this Constitution together, a very miraculous thing that they did. And then that Constitution of document of government, the finest ever put together by man as far as a governing document, to guarantee that the federal government would be just as much of a government as it, or just as have the, well, follow the actions that it should, which means that it would be responsible for about 18 or 20 things. It would be responsible for our relationship with other nations, both commercially and also diplomatically, and of course responsible to protect the nation as a whole, meaning the national defense, that it's responsible for the monetary system, so that you can have one system of money, so that it is one trading entity, that the states are all one unit economically as far as the world goes, and there, that there be free relationships back and forth, free trade, no barriers between states relative to tariffs or anything like that. And a postal service, which in the beginning was vital because it held the country together, and with the creation of a lot of the early roads and things like that, that's a little different now. But those are essentially the things that the federal government, by the Constitution, was given the power to do. And the states were so concerned about the worry about a all-powerful central government, that they would not ratify that Constitution until they were sure all these things were in place, and then with 10 amendments, the 10th of which most people know, that the power not given to the federal government nor forbidden to the states shall remain thine. I could have missed a word there, but at any rate, that which has not been given to the federal government remains with the states and with the people. So I've run for governor and won a couple of primaries, won one general, and won the election in 86, and was thought we could get on the way with having a sovereign state challenge the federal government on the things that they're doing that's unconstitutional, and actually just refuse to recognize the federal power in the areas of education, OSHA, environment. You know, the states. The states are good. They know what needs to be done in their own states better than the federal officials do. But the answer is we've got a document that should be followed. So that kind of brings me up to date, Bill. I have had an interesting life and done quite a few things in my life, but as far as the people out there, that at least tells them a little bit about my background and why I've been so concerned. That brings us up to there.
Okay. There's one other thing I'd like to touch on. During your your term as governor, there was a tremendous campaign mounted against you by the same rag, the Arizona Republic, and of course the evening version of that same ownership paper. That and also in concert with others, which actually ousted you from the office of governor. In extremely what I would consider to be unlawful and unethical methods. Would you care to comment on that for our listeners?
Well, yeah, the Wall Street Journal, which I haven't seen them do that before, they wrote four different editorials relative to what was happening here, and they said they didn't really know all that much about me, but what it was really happening was tantamount to what they were doing to kick a governor out without reason, and to do it by the outmoded process of impeachment was tantamount to being a banana republic, a coup in a banana republic, and they felt that the Arizona was really a shameful state. Well, it really was. Of course, I can give you the background of that very quickly. I was out of politics for several years and wasn't worrying about it, but I saw the power group, the power brokers. The Phoenix 40 was the name that they tied behind. When you get the key bank, when you get a couple of the key law firms, and then, of course, the newspaper.
The only newspapers.
Really the monopoly newspaper. And you put them together, and then, of course, they tie in the other key, the big utilities and the other economic interests. Then, of course, that's who runs the state. Well, they had... They've been running it the way they wanted to literally since the beginning in Arizona. And so when Burton Barr, who was the 22-year majority leader in the House, who had been the bagman, and that isn't my words, that's words of some of the writers in some of the articles, even in the Republic, every year he would go around and pick up the money he needed from the special interests and go and pass it out to people to win elections so he owned their votes. And then he and one of the leaders in the Senate run the state from that position. And, of course, they did so because whoever they had as governor also knew who ran the state. And so they just had it tied up in a very neat little ball. I found this out first when I went to the state Senate in 1960. And run for the Senate, and I wanted to get tax equalization, and I won't get into the details on that, but I could see some real bad things there, that some people were getting charged as much as 18 times more than others on the valuation of their property and their taxes, their property taxes. So I went down, I ran for the office, and I won, and it was back when the Democrats run everything pretty totally, and I was a Republican. But I won and beat out a long-time Democratic state senator.
That was, in fact, a major victory and a great shock to those who had traditionally held the power in this state.
Well, it really was. Of course, they didn't think I'd be able to do much. I was one senator, but it was interesting. We did get some things done. It's amazing that if you don't gripe about everything and all, but if you, when there is a point to be made, you stand up and make it. It's amazing how much you can get accomplished, and people start listening to what you're doing. We did get some good things done, but out of that, the first 6 weeks I was there, I was very quiet and I listened to what was happening. And lo and behold, I was amazed to find that this fellow named Frank Snell, now since passed away recently at the ripe age of 90-something, who was the chairman of the board of Arizona Public Service, the key utility, and also the head of the major law firm, the biggest law firm in the state, and the one that exercised the political control, was really the king of Arizona. And that he could make a phone call down to the Arizona State Senate and pass the word, and absolutely owned 19 out of 28 votes, and generally owned 24 out of 28 votes. And it wouldn't matter what the issue, he could call the issue and get it passed or stopped. So I was appalled. That's one of the problems when I found out how the thing ran. I've never been able to go by and just forget it since. And that's why I guess I've been fighting that group. Well, in 1986, they had Burton Barr. He was the heir apparent, and so Burton was going to move up from 22-year majority leader and key bag man to being the governor. Well, I knew that we just couldn't. That was just the living end. So I belatedly got in, and a bunch of people come around, and we surprised them against the activity of every daily newspaper in the state opposed me, and yet I won the primary against Barr when he had all the money and I didn't have a lot of it. But anyway, then went on to win the general election. And, of course, rather than the usual, rather than supposedly going together and saying, well, now the parties, will get behind you. I was a Republican, so the Republican Party should be after. Now, I knew we'd had a Democrat for 12 years, but they really weren't. Burton and the group went out and brought in another person to run as an independent, who had been a Republican and then a Democrat, was a businessman, and
sort of a Ross Perot.
Oh, kind of that, yeah. A fellow named Bill Schultz. And Bill, I knew when Bill came in that their objective was is to split my vote, and it did. In fact, when I won the general with the three-way, I got 40%. But CBS, who did an exit poll, said that had it been just myself and Carolyn Warner, the Democrat, that I'd have got 55%, she'd have got 45%. Well, anyway, I ran on a few particular things. One of them was, we've got to stop the tax increases. They were increasing taxes, and Arizona was going from one of the lesser costing governments, the states on taxation, to becoming more expensive all the time. So I said, there'll be no tax increases while I'm the governor. In fact, there's a sales tax that the legislature said that was only going to be temporary, that they were making general. I said, we're going to get rid of that 1 cent sales tax, and we don't need to increase taxes, because all we've got to do is bring the activities of the state government in line. Bruce Babbitt was the governor for a couple of terms, and Bruce didn't know the first thing about managing anything. And any of you who know Bruce Babbitt, who's now Clinton's Secretary of the Interior, I think if you know anything about him, you'll agree with what I said. So it was really a mess. One of the things I said, we're going to stop tax increases. We're going to run that place to the degree you can, a government office. We're going to run it along business principles. You can't run it like a business in a sense, but you can run it along business principles and good management principles like you have to do in business to succeed. We're going to, in an intelligent way, reduce the size of state government. We're going to cut crime. Crime in 86 was a big issue, just like it's a big issue in 95. And the thing to do, we're a border state. We're the second to Florida as the conduit for drugs from Central South America. We're going to stop the drug trade, and we're going to get rid of drugs in Arizona. And in doing so, we will reduce crime more than 50%. So let's drain the swamp. And I ran on that. And then I also said, we're going to stop shady land trades, which was, we got a lot of state land, and the insiders were getting rich at the state's expense on land trades. I said, we're going to restore integrity back to government. We're going to restore the sovereignty of the states. And in fact, even weights and measures. Barr had taken all the teeth out of weights and measures, and which allowed, we probably had the worst laws in the state, which allowed people selling products to the public to have absolutely no protection. You couldn't guarantee that you were getting the proper weight on anything that you bought, and also no protection against shoddy merchandise. And Consequently, I said, we're going to straighten out that weights and measures and put some teeth back in it. Well, in doing this, you're hitting right at the foundation of a lot of special interests who want to run things. And the thing is, when I won the office, they didn't think I would follow through, and I went right to work, and we started doing it. We put together a drug program, which we called an Alliance for Drug-Free Arizona. In fact, Ed Meese was then Attorney General, and I showed it to him, and he said that would make a good model for every state in the union. And we got some much heavier bill. I got a bill through the legislature, which is hard to do in 1 year, but I got it through in 2 months to tighten up our drug laws, set up some special drug courts, get a lot more resources into drug enforcement. But the key thing was to get everybody in the state behind it. Schools, churches, social organizations, business organizations, governments, everybody to sign up onto our alliance and say, within our area, we will get rid of drugs. And the peer pressure, the whole thing, and it was starting to work. And then, of course, we stopped the shady land trades. I couldn't get all that I wanted done in reducing the size of government because, although I had a Republican legislature, you know, just because the Republicans don't mean that they don't like to spend money just as well as a lot of the liberal Democrats. And consequently, I had a knockdown dragout with them. You come in mid-year, budget in Arizona goes from July 1 to June 30th, and we were halfway through the year when I was took the office, and we were $160 million in the red, and in Arizona you can't be in the red, you got to balance your budget. Well, they knew that when they passed the bill, they appropriated too much money, and they had been used to in the past just raising taxes, so they increased taxes and balanced the budget. I said, nope. So I handed the legislature a rehash of the bill that we were halfway through, and we took $156 million out of it, balanced the budget, didn't raise taxes, and went on our way, and we got that done.
Now, that's something that the people of every state and of the nation have been wanting to do for years and years.
Yeah, you can do it. I'll tell you one of the things you find out is a little side on this budgeting. They really put mumbo-jumbo. It's the biggest bunch of baloney that you can't balance a budget, and the federal government could balance its budget in at least within 2 or 3 years if they just wouldn't keep increasing the costs every year. But they lied to you, say, we're going to reduce the spending. Well, what they're saying is they're reducing the increase. They're not reducing it.
Mm-hmm.
And so they don't tell the people the truth. But we had the same thing here. I found, for example, that they just took the budget they had the year before, and then all they discussed was how much more they were going to spend. They didn't sit down and start over like I did in my business for 38 years and said, we're going to see how much we have to spend to make the business operate. And that's how you run it, from what you call start out from zero and then just put on for each one. Well, none of the governments do that. And you hear a little talk about that, some of them at the federal level, but they won't do it because they like to take what they've got and fool the people by just continuing to add and make you think they've cut when they've really not added as much as they said they were going to add. Anyway, we
got to take a break, Governor. We'll be right back. Don't go away, folks.
Of a country road on the wind it comes to call, and it sings in the farms and the factory towns, and where you think there'd be no song at all. And the words are the words that our fathers heard as they whistled down the years, and the name of a song is the name of a dream, and it feels it to our ears. America, America. on the courthouse walls are the words that make us free.
The Hour of the Time is brought to you, of course, by Swiss America Trading. And I don't want to take too much time out from the governor to talk about this. So, folks, I'm going to trust you to call. And I want you to thank them for allowing you to listen to the Hour of the Time. And, by the way, you might want to mention that you are a steady listener and that I sent you. And believe me, you're going to get red carpet treatment. And remember, you're not only guaranteed by Swiss America Trading on your dealings with them, and they not only have a buyback program, but I back them 100%. If you're not satisfied, you call me, and I guarantee you I'll take care of it, and nobody else anywhere can give you anything like that. 1-800-289-2646. That's 1-800-289-2646. Do it now. You'll be glad that you did. Welcome back to the Hour of the Time, Evan Meekum.
Bill, I've talked too much about me. Let me just bottom line this thing.
Okay.
Because we've got a lot of important things that we talked about. I'm not the important one. The things that happen in our country, which gets worse all the time, and what some things need to be doing. Let's just bottom line it to say that we were going ahead and moving as rapidly as we could. We got cross ways of the special interest didn't like what I was doing. They trumped up some charges that really had no bearing. You know, I guess the fact that I was impeached out of the office is probably the best guarantee that I was honest. And, of course, I know I was. I broke no laws. They accused me of such. And, of course, normally when you get anybody in an office, a governor or something like that, they don't take them out by impeachment. They take them out if they've done something crooked. They charge them with a crime, take them to court. If they convict them, well, of course, that takes them out of the office. And for 60 years through then, why, that's the only way anybody had been removed. And two of the governors, who was elected the same time I was, two Republicans, were taken out of office by being convicted of committing felonies. Well, they wouldn't let me go that way. They was all right to accuse me if they wanted. They didn't have any proof because I hadn't broken any laws. And when we did get that to a criminal court, I got a quick acquittal. But in the meantime, they used that as a basis to make me look bad. And, of course, with a monopoly press and the others joining in every day, writing about five bad articles about you every day and never being able to get your points out there, it is a little bit, there is a lot of power there in the press. And they got the legislature, they got me out the only way they could, and that was to get me voted out, which is what the impeachment process is. And you don't have to prove anything. They didn't prove anything. So I kind of wear that impeachment badge as a badge of honor in Arizona because I wouldn't go along to get along with the corrupt forces, and so they were able to vote me out of office. But that's the big story, of course, is what's happening to America today.
That's correct. But I wanted to get that out of the way because a lot of listeners out there only know, either they don't know you or they only know what they've read in the press, and it was important that you tell them what really happened, that I know really happened, and that the people in Arizona can think for themselves and don't believe what they read in the paper without checking the facts.
Oh, yeah. I got a lot more friends than enemies. The only thing is my enemies are quite powerful.
Oh, yes. Well, let's get up to date now. What's going on now, and what are we doing?
Well, and I'm sure you and Walt talked last night about what we're doing. Of course, CNC and spawning out of that to spin off the organization of CURE. The thing that the bottom line is this, that we don't have a two-party system. We've got a one-party system in Washington with two heads. You've got a Republican and a Democrat, but you don't have two separate deals. And the same people behind the scenes control both of them. And, of course, that's why ever since Roosevelt ushered in, this is the beginning of socialism and the New Deal in 1933, which is frankly what the New Deal was, gone steadily, step by step. Doesn't matter whether it's been a Republican or a Democrat president. It's continued to go that way. It doesn't matter whether you have Republicans or Democrats in running the Congress. It's just the fact that I liken it to this, and as I am a lifelong Republican because that did, if you had to make a choice between the two, why, that was better than the Democrats were more the socialists than the Republicans, but it's only a matter of degree. Of course, that you can't paint everybody with the same brush. There's some very, still some fine constitutionalists, but not many. And I always liken it to the fact that the Democrats want to run us over the cliff to socialism at 100 miles an hour, and the Republicans want to be a little more dignified and sedate and only do it at 50, but it still ruins the country. And we're so far down the line now that there really is only one answer. We cannot expect this country to survive in its present configuration if we do not change who is the chief executive. Another president that owes his allegiance to the Council on Foreign Relations and the Rockefeller Trilateralists and the One World Elitists, which is moving towards One World Socialism under the United Nations. You can't, if you continue that one more term, they'll have accomplished it. And so I think that people in America need to realize what a really dangerous position we're in. If we do not balance the budget, if we do not get ourselves to where the one-worlders are not dictating our terms, we've got to get ourselves out of anything like NAFTA and GATT, because that's big steps into the one-world deal with having international organizations controlling how we handle our trade and how our laws are interpreted and really supposedly superimposing themselves over the Constitution, then we've lost it. We are no longer a separate and sovereign nation. And, of course, we lose the many freedoms that we have always felt that the Constitution guaranteed us. So we've got to get a chief executive and a vice president that will make a pledge and that we know by their background and what they've done that they will follow that through. You know, political pledges aren't worth very much, and so you got to go on back and make sure that these two people that we hope to nominate and hope to elect are two that by their own background says they're honest enough that they do believe in the Constitution, they do understand it, they know about management, they know what has to be done to get the government back into within the confines of that allowed in the Constitution, the federal government. And that will solve every problem that I've ever heard anybody bring up. Our monetary problem, get it back under the Constitution where it's under the control of Congress instead of a private banking group called the Federal Reserve System to make people think it's a government entity, which it isn't. We've got to get rid of, if we go to the Constitution, we'd find, for example, that the Department of Education is not constitutional. There's no basis for the federal government to be involved in education and a whole lot of other things. But I'll use that one as one example. While I was governor, we figured out that about a little less than 5% of the money we spent on education in Arizona came from the federal government, and it cost us more in the things we had to do to qualify for the money than the money itself was, and it was a terrible problem in our education system because it let the National Teachers Union, called the NEA, come in and dictate so many things that we're doing in education. So that's just an example. So that's the thing that has to be done in order for this country to survive as an independent sovereign nation. And I guess that's the point of my focus now, Bill, that we're looking towards 96, and as I'm sure you discussed somewhere last night, put this organization together called CURE. We've got a three people opening the office and starting it to get everybody organized throughout the states, meet together in a national convention to nominate our two candidates in an open convention, and get them where we can get them on the ballot as independent candidates in every state, and we can, I believe, find plenty of people that are not Yellow Dog Republicans and Yellow Dog Democrats. And by that, I don't mean that the people are that bad, but the terminology that, well, I'm so loyal to the party that if they run a Yellow Dog on the ticket, I still vote the party line. And absolute stupidity. And I believe that I believe it's different. I think there's plenty of people that will join in with us.
Well, I think so, too. And I think that an awful lot has been accomplished in Kansas City. I was particularly impressed with the dedication and the brains that all of these people brought to be able to put this together. But the most surprising result for me was the first meeting. How did you feel about that?
Well, I'll tell you. Yes, it was, except it's still a surprise because each time we've done something that I've never seen happen in a group like that before, and that we've come out with people from so varying areas, all these different parties, you know, the American Party, of course, your Constitution Party, the Libertarian Party, the American Independent Party, the U.S. Taxpayers Party, sent all these people sent representatives and a number of others. And some interested groups that weren't necessarily a party, and came together with different the parties with different platforms and different ideas and all, and yet came together and agreed that the platform would be the Constitution. And I believe that was the unifying thing. But to see everybody come together and resolve that yes, we will join together instead of trying to field a whole lot of candidates that don't have a chance to get anywhere, that if all the people who recognize the need for change will join together under one umbrella, that we'll do that, then we can bring it about. And that was major. You're right, Bill. Yet to come back and start putting the details together and end up with the formal organization, the Constitution that's United Republic for Everyone, what CURE stands for, that in itself, each one was literally a miracle to get that many people together and have them all unitedly agree. To me, I have not experienced that before. There's generally an argument about this or an argument about that. I haven't seen an argument there. I've seen a lot of discussions, but everybody very level-headed and wanting to find a solution. And yes, I think it's nothing short of miraculous.
Well, that was the spirit of the thing. There were some conflicts on occasion, and some heartfelt pleas, and even some tears at some points. But the great desire of everyone to come together and to make it work just rode over everything.
Yep.
You know, to me, I really almost felt like I was sitting at a meeting with Thomas Jefferson and Benjamin Franklin. And I know that must have been some of what it must have been like in the early days of this nation.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. You know, I think you're exactly right, and that is that people with strong wills, strong ideas, but joined together, not necessarily everybody getting all their own way, but joined together and says, we have got to have a spiritual awakening as well as that, because the spirit was good there. I think a good feeling was there, and camaraderie among everybody. But we have got to do this, because if we don't, then we may forever lose our chance. And that's the way the founders felt. They felt the same way.
What's the next step, Governor?
Well, the next step is underway we've been talking to Nelson and, of course, Nick
Ivanovich,
who wasn't there, but Nick's on board, and Don Larson, who has been very high up in the United We Stand. Don has resigned from United We Stand, and is although she's kept the party that they organized, and she's kind of incurred the wrath of the guests of the Dallas office, but she's on board, and they're just busy putting everything together. We're getting the official things done with the FEC to make sure that everything is done just legally and according to Hoyle. And then they're starting to network, and of course they feel that they have a network, they can touch a network of over 1 million people, and of course you've got a lot, and the other parties all have constituencies, and there's a lot of people out there not aligned with anybody, and it's just to start these state organizations. Everybody who really is concerned about this, I would advise them to get a hold of us and say that you'd like to join in, and you'd like to, you're not asked to, it isn't a party. We're not trying to make a new party. We're asking all parties to join together in a coalition to elect a constitutionist who will get this country back under the Constitution. And that's the simple thing that holds us together. And if you'd like to help, if you're as concerned about our country as the rest of us are, and I know that there's just millions and tens of millions of you out there that are, and you wonder, well, what can I do? You know, you hear this so much. I hear it so much when I make talks to people, and well, what can I do? I'm nobody. I'm just a little guy. Well, you know,
you sound just like me.
Well, we all are. We're all little guys. We're just all, it takes all these raindrops to fill up the rain barrel. But each one to do that which they can do. Talk to their friends and their neighbors. Talk to their associates in business and social organizations, at church, and to bring about, give people an opening. The parties have shut most people out. This is to open it up, and everybody can be involved in this. So we're going to, the money we raise for our candidates won't be from the special interests in the big chunks, because the special interests don't contribute. They invest. They put money in because they know they're going to get a return on their investment. Ours will be contributions, because it'll be people putting money in who expect good government, but not something specific back for themselves. And we expect to get, a few million people contributing a little money to raise the funds to do this, and not have any strings on to our candidates. And if this sounds crazy, folks, I'll tell you something. It must have sounded crazy to the people who wanted to stay with the king back in the early days, and it sounded crazy every time that there has to be a turnaround in any nation's history, and certainly we're there now. But necessity is the mother of invention, and we've got something going, and I hope that you'll, by the tens of thousands, you'll want to call in, get a hold of Bill, pass the word on to Waldar to get a hold of, we'll have this organized, and Bill will have the information just as fast as we get our office open, which is now being done, so that we can handle this national organization, get going. Then, so you can have the information, how you can be a delegate to the national convention that makes the choice of the candidates, and just get with it and help save your country.
Yeah, and it'll be the first time that the average person will have a real shot at being a delegate.
You bet.
To nominate and to help push through a candidate for president.
Yep.
And, folks, what you can do is write to Walt Myers in care of CURE, or the Constitutionist Networking Center, at 442 East 1250 Road, Baldwin, Kansas, 66006. That's Walt Myers in care of CURE, or the Constitutionist Networking Center, 442 East 1250 Road, Baldwin, Kansas, CURE006. Now, CURE is the overall umbrella organization that allows us all to participate together and use funds to put on a convention. And we plan to have some regional conferences in order that all of the different candidates will have a chance to present themselves to the people. How's this going to work, Governor?
Yeah, we're going to, as fast as the organization in the field goes together, and we've already got some people organizing some of those, we will have regional meetings so that you can get out and see what's going on and test it for yourself and come out and see what kind of people we are and who will be put forth suggesting they run. Some are going to suggest themselves and others are being suggested by people, and to talk over the issues, look at what needs to be done and see how to get organized in all the areas throughout all the 50 states. In fact, I don't mind anybody having my phone number. I'm at area code 602-878-5377, and I'm Evan Meacham, M-E-C-H-A-M. And
you want to repeat your number one more time, Governor?
Area code 602-878-5377. Because I'm hearing from people as well, and if you want to get in the network, why, you know, we're not going to jump down your throat, and we're not trying to get a lot of your money. We just want you to be a part of helping save the country. And so let me know, because we're going to get back in touch with you. I have a recorder on my answering machine. If I'm not here, why, it'll take it. But I think inside of 30 days, we will have probably the most major, except for the so-called two major parties of organization going on in the country.
Well, this is just all overwhelming, and I'm certainly very happy to have been able to take a part in making all this happen, and I know that you are too, and everyone else that's been involved. Before we go into all these closing remarks in our outtake, is there anything you'd like to say in closing, Governor Meacham, that you think maybe?
Yeah, I'd like to say one thing. You know, we're a very diverse nation, but I want to say one thing that also that held all of the founders together, and that will do the same for us. You know, they were believers in God, and none of them felt that man was smart enough to govern other men without having direction from God. They also, however, had been under the boot of the heel of tyrants in Europe who had used religion to control the people. And so one of the things they insisted on is that we have no state church and that there be no infringement upon freedom of religion, so that we can all believe in the God that we want to believe in, but that we... I think we share the common feeling, just like Washington, Lincoln, Jefferson, God-fearing man, not worrying about the denomination of religion, but recognizing that man by and women in and of themselves do not have enough in knowledge and intelligence without having some inspiration from God to help them govern. And that's the kind of people they had then, and I believe that's the kind of people we've put together. That doesn't mean that any you have to take a litmus test on what church you belong to. That isn't the point. It's a belief in God and a devotion to Him and a recognition that without His help, it's like Lincoln said as he left Springfield to go to Washington to take the office of president. He said that without God's help, he could not succeed, and with God's help, he could not fail. And that's the kind of an attitude that I believe we've got here, and that's what they had, and that's the other thing that binds us. Bill, it's been so nice to be on your program, and appreciate being able to talk to your vast audience out there around the world. It's a beautiful world. Sometimes there's some ugly things going on in it, but it's a beautiful world. I've seen it, quite a lot of it, and we certainly want to get America back on the beam so that we can be that we can hold that banner of liberty, that hope for freedom for others to follow, and we got to straighten out our home before we can be that much of an example to the rest of the world.
That's right, and thank you so much, Governor Meekham, and we'll try to get you back on here before too long, because I know that an hour is not long enough to talk very much about a lot of things. So thank you very much, and I think you got time to hit the refrigerator before you go to bed. Good night. Well, folks, here's a little bit of something for you to chew on before you go to bed tonight. A new national study released by the Population Reference Bureau in Washington, D.C., shows how much you've been scammed on this gun control issue. It's a lie from beginning to end. The report shows, ladies and gentlemen, that in 1933, that's 1933, nationally, there were 9.8 homicides per 100,000 people by all methods. In 1992, the most recent year with complete statistics, there were 10 homicides per 100,000 people. Since 1933, the number of homicides in the United States of America only increased by 0.2 per 100,000 people. Good night, ladies and gentlemen. Tomorrow night, Bernadette Smith. Don't miss it. Good night, and God bless you all.
If tomorrow all the things were gone, worked for all my life, and I had to start again, just my children and my wife. Thank my lucky stars to be living here today. But the flag still stands for freedom, and they can't take that away. And I'm proud to be an American, where at least I know I'm free. And I won't forget the men who died, who gave that life to me. And I'd gladly stand up next to you and defend her till today. But there ain't no doubt I love this land. God bless the USA. From the lakes of Minnesota to the hills of Tennessee, across the plains of from sea to shining sea, from Detroit down to Houston and New York to L.A., where there's pride in every American heart, and it's time we stand and say. Defend her till today, but there ain't